Hello, and welcome to Python 411, Computer Programming for Everybody. This is an exciting and exclusive interview with Michael Ford, also known as Fuzzy Man, the famed Python hacker who in only 3 years after finding the language and getting back into programming after a 10-year hiatus, has become one of the leading hackers and open source programmers and community assets. So here we go.
Okay, this is another episode of Python 411, Computer Programming for Everybody. And after a couple of false starts, I am finally here interviewing Michael Ford, also known as, I hope I can use the term Fuzzy Man, because that's the online username that I first met you by, Michael.
Yeah, hello everyone.
Hopefully you don't take offense at that, because I think it's just a wonderful online name.
No, I've never
been. I actually became aware of you about 3 years ago because you began to use FireDrop, which is the blog system that I use and content management software originally created by Hans Nowak, and you contacted me about that, and then I saw the other activities as you started using the user group and. It's the reason I decided I wanted to interview as my first interviewee is because I've never seen anyone learn to program so proficiently, so quickly. And from 3 years ago, being new to Python, you've been more productive than anyone else I can imagine. So I wanted to talk about the background of how you did that. So could you tell us a little bit about your programming background originally and how you came to Python and how did you learn it so quickly?
Well, as you said, I started programming about 3 years ago, actually for a fun little project with a game, a few of us have found. This was an online play-by-email game where we get these reports emailed to us, and we decided to work as a team, put all of our reports together and automate a few of the commands. And I very nearly ended up learning Smalltalk, a version called Squeak. But at the last minute, someone suggested Python, and it was a complete fluke. We tried it out, and before that, I hadn't done any programming for about 10 years. Maybe 13 years ago now, I'd programmed a bit on the Amiga computer.
Yeah, what language did you program that in?
Well, I started off in that with a dialect of BASIC called AMOS, which
okay.
was great fun, and I had my first experience of making operating system calls from BASIC,
mm-hmm.
and then I actually did a bit of an assembler. I'd messed around
wow.
designing single board computers, so I wanted to learn a bit of assembler, and the Motorola chipset, fantastic to program.
So you really, how were you able to, learning assembly language is obviously a big achievement. Did you find that difficult, or?
Well, I didn't actually. I mean, the great thing about the Amiga was that, a bit like Python, all the complicated stuff that was handled by the operating system, making operating system calls, was so easy. You'd just build up your data structure and make the call. And so in assembler, although it's got a very difficult reputation, basically every step is very, very simple.
Mm-hmm,
it's
mm-hmm.
very low level. Each instruction is extremely simple. So it's actually, if you can get your head around the weird notation, it's actually not very difficult to learn, particularly on the Motorola chips, and I enjoyed that, but I didn't actually do any more programming for about another 10 years, Ron, and then I jumped into Python, and it was kind of love at first sight.
Was Python your first exposure to object-oriented programming?
Yeah, I've done some procedural programming with the BASIC, but I've never done any object-oriented programming, and I remember when I first came across classes and objects, that was quite a hurdle to overcome. It was entirely new to me, and I did find it, learning it and learning how it works to be a bit of a chore at the time.
Do you recall what brought Python to your attention?
Well, as I said, I'd never heard of it before. It was this this little project I was working with some other people, and one of the other guys suggested Python. I think the deciding factor was that at the time, the only computer I had at home was a little pocket PC device.
Mm-hmm.
There was a version of there still is a version of Python that works with that.
Oh, okay.
And so that was the deciding factor for Python.
So the fact that Python is so ubiquitous and works on so many platforms was a help bring you to it, certainly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. If it hadn't worked on the Pocket PC, we'd have gone for something else. Pure accident, really.
And I take it that you learned by doing. Is that a correct statement? I mean, you basically jumped right into this project and learned how to program in Python.
That's entirely right. I mean, I find the only way I can ever learn anything is by having a project to go at. Whenever I see something new that I'd like to learn, trying to learn it in the abstract just doesn't work for me. I can't find the motivation unless I've got something I actually want to do with it.
Well, as I say, you learned it very quickly, but very well, because in the 3 years you've been in the Python community, I mean, I've watched as you have written many tools and app programs and written a lot of tutorials and very learned articles, for instance, for Pyzine magazine, and just an incredible outpouring of creativity. So I've been amazed. And, of course, since I use FireDrop, I know that you took over that project and now are the primary developer on it, and I'm benefiting from all the additional improvements you're making. So I think you're an inspiration for people in the community who are learning, who are new to the language, to say, wow, look what a person has done in 3 years. And if they check out your website at www.voidspace.org.uk, VOIDSPACE, they'll find all your projects, and I think they'll be very inspired. Of course, most of the listeners are probably already very familiar with your website. Could we talk about just a few of the major projects that you're working on? Let's start with FireDrop. I use it. I've been using it longer than you have, actually, and I run all my website for my website and for my blog are completely done using it. So you just came out with a new release on it?
Yeah, that's right. 0.2.1, actually.
Mm-hmm. And you've also made a plugin system that created some plugins, and I guess other people have contributed at least one or more plugins also. And I know one of the things we've talked about is that you're creating a plugin for using it to create a podcast RSS files, which I'm very interested in, and I'll definitely be using in the near future for this podcast series.
Great, that's very good to hear.
Yeah. So, do you have any future plans for FireDrop?
Well, it's one of those projects that I use it myself. I run two blogs, a personal one and a technical one, and the great thing for me was two things. First of all, it was written in Python, which immediately made me think, great, you know, I can extend this, I can add anything to it. But also, you manage your blog on your own computer. It's not done through a server, and I've had enough experience of the cheap hosting accounts and losing data to know that was how I wanted to do things. And it was one of the few tools that worked like that. It just generates straight HTML files, and you can upload them by FTP itself, or you can do it manually.
Now that you mention it, that's exactly why I started using it, and that's why I like it, is because it does everything on my own machine, which is, as you say, very unusual. Most blogging software that I've seen is it's hosted on your server, offsite server in so many cases.
Or somebody else's.
Somebody else's, yeah. So it's a great system, and I recommend it very highly, especially to any Python user. It's very Python-friendly, so to speak. And I guess the other one that I haven't used myself, but that I find very intriguing is Movable Python. And I think you need to explain to people, if anybody out there isn't familiar with it, exactly what it is, because it's something that I think has a lot of applicability in the future.
Yeah, well, this is a distribution of Python. It's for Windows only at the moment, although we're looking at changing that. And it doesn't need to be installed. So the main advantage of that is that it can run off a USB key, and so you can take your whole development environment around with you on a USB key, plug it into any Windows computer, and then there you've got your development environment. It comes with idle, with Spade, the Python editor, and also with IPython, which is a great Python shell. It's got the whole standard library with it and a whole set of other bundled extension libraries. It will work with basically all the other third-party extension libraries there are out there, So almost anything that you're doing with Python can be done with movable Python. I've got a user who's running Zope with it and various other things. But as well as just being a distribution of Python, it's got a nice little GUI for launching programs, for launching the other accessories that come with it. So I'm actually starting to find that I enjoy just having the GUI just for launching programs and entering command lines without having to drop down to the command line itself.
Right.
And it's also useful. It comes in with Python 2.4, obviously 2.3, and 2.2. And I like to test my programs to check they run on the earlier versions of Python. And you can do that without having to actually have them installed on the machine, which can be very useful.
It's very important because a lot of the hosting services don't have the most recent versions of Python. I know that's the case with my host that hosts my website. But it sounds like a really interesting project. And I don't know that very many other languages have a distribution like movable Python. So I think it's a great advantage for Python to have that.
Right.
Another project that you're involved in is called REST to Web.
Yeah, I've been working on that this weekend, actually.
Yeah, now that's sort of an infrastructure tool that enables a lot of functionality, I guess. Do you want to say a few words about that?
Sure. It's one of my favorite projects, mainly because I use it to build my website, which is one of my biggest hobbies, I think, keeping that up to date. And it comes about because there are a lot of content management systems and things like even PHP itself, which are all designed for having dynamic content on your website. That's content that changes regularly. But usually, you don't actually change the content of your website that often. So it makes much more sense to serve them as just static HTML.
Mm-hmm.
So REST to Web just generates HTML files for you. It knows when you've changed your contents and will generate new files. But the most important thing is that it lets you store all your articles and even your index pages and other parts of your website in restructured text format. That's the Python DocuTools project, which is so much friendlier than HTML.
Yeah.
I've just been working on a new HTML template for FireDrop and movable Python. The REST to Web is used to build the documentation for those. And
are there quite a few people using REST to Web? I mean, I get the impression there are.
Well, I know of at least 12 or 13 websites that are out there.
Right.
So possibly not a huge number. There's probably a few I don't know about. But it's something I enjoy using in programming.
Speaking of your website again, I just, as a parenthetical remark, I just want to make sure I point out that it's a very creative website. There's a lot on it. Of course, primarily the Pythonic material, which is what we're talking about. But there's also a lot of artistic work and creative writing that you have done. And so, the website itself is a work that people should check out, if they haven't. So I just wanted to get that in. There's another project you have, I believe, Config Obj, OBJ?
Yeah, that's right. That's got its roots in the AtlantiBots project. One of the members of that wrote some functions for reading config files, and this is version 4 of those as basically a single object for easy reading and writing of config files.
Right. So, I mean, and keep in mind that I hope all the listeners just keep in mind that all of this you've done in 3 years. It's really amazing what you have accomplished, and we've really only hit on the highlights of a few of the programs. I mean, there are others. One other one I'll mention is a fun little program called Nanogram, which is really just a fun program. I recommend it to people.
Very silly little CGI that you put your name into it and see what other words can be made out of it. That was, again, one of the first things I wrote in there was a little practice in using recursion, and the actual anagram finding algorithm is only like 20 lines or so, which is a testimony to the power of Python and its basic data types. But it just whirs away amazingly quickly and churns out all the possible anagrams.
Yeah, and it was one of the, as you say, one of the first Python programs I think that you put on your website that you did yourself, and it probably, looking at that source code, would be good for newcomers to look at and learn what can be done with relatively few lines of code and fairly straightforward manner. A good learning tool. Speaking of learning tools, I have personally gotten the value out of your tutorials on your website. You've written several tutorials, which I find very clearly written and
helpful. I think the first one I found was the FireDrop one, but I know, for instance, URL Lib2, you have a very nice tutorial on that, and also CookieLib. And
URL Lib2 is that's a fantastic little module for fetching web pages and
right.
web resources. But you need to know a little bit of the background to the HTTP, if I can just say that properly, the HTTP protocol
right.
in order to use it, because as soon as anything gets wrong, you get HTTP errors thrown, and in order to understand what that means, you need to understand about HTTP errors, and obviously the Python documentation isn't the place to go into that, so it's a little tutorial that shows you how to use URL lib2. And also how to properly catch errors and what's going on, and a few, you know, simple examples of a few more of the slightly more advanced. I don't go into a great deal of detail, and that's proved to be a very popular little article now.
Well, I really appreciate that you contribute those tutorials to the community. It's really a community service, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who much appreciates it. Also on the writing front, you have contributed what I have to call a very what I call very learned technical papers to PyZine magazine, the online Python magazine, and I know there's been several, but the one that helped me the most was the one on CGI programming, which is very clear, and I recommend it to folks. So, don't you find it amazing that in such a short period of time you were writing learning state of the art technical articles. I'm just amazed at the quality of what you write, but very much appreciated. Now, CGI programming, I think you did one on web clients and another on Unicode, I know, is quite extensive. Are there plans for any future PyZine articles?
Well, there's a follow-up to the CGI article, part two on that. The first one just goes into the basic sort of how-to.
Mm-hmm.
The second one puts it together.
Well, I'm looking forward to that. That'll be great.
Yep. None of it's currently in the pipeline, although there are various other articles on the website, and I'd like to keep adding to those.
Yeah. Now, I guess, I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but I know that you have some good news to share in terms of your future Python use, which up until now has been done as purely as a hobby-type situation almost. So do you want to share the good news with the audience?
Well, yeah, I'd be delighted to. At the moment, I'm a brick salesman. I've been selling bricks for about 9 years, nearly 10 years, so my status as programmer has been purely amateur, and I'm afraid I'm due to lose my amateur status in 2 weeks' time, and somebody's going to be paying me to work on Python. Which
Congratulations.
My dream job, really.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. I know when we first started talking about this podcast, you were applying for this job, and so it's 2 more weeks before you start?
That's right,
yeah. I won't ask you to tell any more about it because that's your personal business, but it, from what you've told me privately, it sounds extremely exciting, and I'm sure you're going
to
enjoy it. And
I'm very much looking forward to
it. I just can't imagine how much more how much more expertise you will acquire doing it full-time, considering how much you've done as an amateur for the last 3 years. So.
Yeah, well, there's a few things I haven't worked on. I haven't used threading. I've steered clear of it.
Yeah, okay.
So there's a lot I haven't done, which I'm going to learn. Unfortunately, I think in some ways I very much enjoy keeping my blog up to date, but I certainly won't stop. But they might slow down a little with the new job. We'll have to see on that.
The last thing I would just again state is that you've really got a lot of material on your website. The some of the creative writing you've done, which I mentioned earlier, is I find it very enjoyable, and I'll just leave it at that and tell people that they ought to check it out. Nothing to do with Python necessarily. And also, you're very much into spirituality, and you have some articles, and I also have enjoyed those very much. So
right.
I don't know if you want to say anything about that, but I just couldn't help but mention it myself.
Well, it's certainly something that, that shaped my life and is really more important than the programming. But
amen. I agree with that, and I salute you for that. Well, again, I was determined to do you as my first interviewee for Python 411, and I appreciate you sticking with me through some of the difficulties I had and the learning curve. So Are there any final comments you would like to leave with people going forward?
Well, if this is a podcast going out to people, particularly who are new to Python programming or considering learning Python, I found Python a real joy to learn and very powerful, very expressive. I can program almost as fast as I can type with it.
Amazing.
So I just say, you know, you can achieve an enormous amount in Python and a friendly community to support you. So don't be afraid to ask questions. That's certainly how I found my way forward, and good luck.
Yeah, and that's really why I wanted to do this more than anything, this interview, because a lot of people who are just new to Python do listen to this podcast series, and you are an inspiration, and you do participate in a Python news group. People can ask you questions right there or email you from your blog.
Yeah.
And, again, your website, and I'll put this in the show notes on my discussion forum, but www.voidspace.org.uk. And that's voidspace.org.uk. And I hope that everyone else is it has to be inspirational to so many people. So, and the tools and the tutorials and the Python articles, it's just a wonderful contribution. And the new job couldn't happen to a more worthy person. So congratulations. And let's stay in touch. I know you're going to be busy, but I look forward to well, first of all, I'm going to be using FireDrop more heavily than ever as I rededicate to that, and I'm cleaning up my system and reinstalling everything and making sure I don't have duplicates. So I'm going to be using some of the plugins on the Mac, and I'm sure we'll be in touch because of that. So,
well, great. You can be our beta tester then.
Yeah, that's what I'll be. Okay, well, Michael, thank you again very much, and I plan on getting this edited and up on my website. Today's actually Saturday, April 1st, and I plan on getting it up by tomorrow, Sunday, and looking forward to that, and I'm not going to worry too much about the new license, April 1st, because I got up, and as I was getting ready to do the interview, I checked out the news group, and I saw Steve Holden talking about the new license, and then there was Michael Ford with a little bit of concern expressed there, and I thought, oh, man, this is so, but I think if you read the details of the license, your concern will go away. Okay, so thank you, and have a wonderful weekend. Okay, Michael. Bye-bye.
So there you have it, an exclusive interview, the first Python 411 interview with Fuzzy Man, as I like to call him, but Michael Ford, an extremely inspiring Python programmer. Check out his website, www.voidspace.org.uk, and spread the word that Python is a good programming language to learn. And if you run into people considering learning Python, you might consider sending them on over to this podcast and have them listen to the story of Fuzzy Man. And I think it will inspire them and help convince them that this is the language for them. And I'll be coming out with future podcasts on a regular basis on subjects. And also, I'd love to do more interviews. So looking for interviewees. If you have a story to tell, you can put together a guest podcast. Just send me an MP3 file of any length on a subject of your choice. Or if you'd prefer to get it out through an interview, that might make it easier. I'll interview you. Just send me an email or let me know, and I'll definitely interview you, and we'll go from there. Meantime, spread the word by word of mouth that Python is easy. It's computer programming for everybody, and yet powerful enough to do things that maybe couldn't be done in any other way. So there you go. Until the next episode of Python 411, computer programming for everybody.